Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I am Mike Lupica, MLB.com, and welcome to the opening day of the baseball season edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast, which is the continuation of our long-running show on ESPN-TV. We now do this twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays. And guys, I understand all the generational problems of baseball, but there is a part of everybody who is a true sports fan who is not excited about the day that feels like New Year's Day in sports. And there are games all across the board. There are games from Yankee Stadium all the way to Seattle, where the defending champs play the Mariners, and Chris Sale, who got the last three outs of the World Series out of the bullpen, starts for the Red Sox. And so, guys, the American League East is always a good place to start, even though I'm not sure that the Astros aren't the best team. And the Yankees and the Red Sox, once again over the last couple of years, has become ultimate fighting again. And they played a four-game series that felt like a seven-game series in the division series last year. They both won 100 games. The Yankees have even beefed up a bullpen that was already the best in the world. And I'll start with this. I looked something up. I wrote a column about this for MLB.com yesterday. In the history of baseball, guys, this is actually kind of interesting. Only once before has a team had two 50 home run guys on the same team at the same time. And it was Mantle and Maris back in the 1960s. The Yankees have Stanton and Judge. And last year we thought they were going to hit 100 home runs. Maybe they will this year. It's one of the reasons why the Yankees are such a compelling team to watch.
Well, they have even more than that, Mike. I would amplify it. If I go back to something I was predicting last year, they have three, maybe four guys who could hit 40. I mean, Sanchez is going to be an interesting guy to watch this year. He certainly had an odd year last year.
Yeah.
But the way he broke into baseball a couple of years ago was you know, eye-opening, and he still remains that a fascinating. And when he hits them, he doesn't hit cheap home runs, Mike. Am I correct about this?
If he'd hit one 20 feet further last year in Game 4, who knows? They might still be playing that division series.
All right, so you're right, Mike. They have that potential. They have that potential.
267 home runs, and they are saying in the spring, Mitch and Bob, they think they can hit more this year.
They think, I've seen someone, not maybe so facetiously, suggested 300 for them, one of their own.
It's not crazy.
Whether it was Judge or Stanton or whatever, which is just beyond, you know, I remember how, you know, I grew up with the magic number was 221, the 47 Giants, and then that was matched by the Reds in 56, and it's been rather obliterated since then. Anyway, yes, they have that power, and now we're being told that Judge is getting, you know, more sophisticated. He's figuring out his swing, that he's going to try to cut down his enormous strikeout total, you know, that he's poised for, you know, even more greatness this year. So I'm just, you know, dying of curiosity to see how some of this stuff.
I have to say, from not living in New York or Boston, so we observe the two of your teams, you know, a little bit differently than being on the inside. The perception of New York is always, when you start the season, okay, who did they buy this year? You know, what expensive star used to be on another team is now on the Yankees. And, you know, they sat out the biggest names in the free agency. They didn't get a Bryce Harper. They didn't get a Manny Machado. They added, you know, role players for the most part. And I find that very interesting for the Yankees. I mean, they got a couple, you know, obviously big star hitters there, but then they're really counting on a lot of young talent to come
through. Being outspent by the Red Sox, Mitch.
Yeah, yeah. And they, if they're going to get outspent by anybody, I guess it's going to be the Red Sox who do that. But they added Paxton. I thought that was a good move. You know, they need a little shoring up in the rotation. I'm curious that you guys watch these guys pitch all the time. Between the two pitching staffs of the Red Sox and the Yankees, who do you think has the...
Well, it's fascinating because one is loaded. Well, you know, Bob, I'll let Bob take this. One is loaded in the starting rotation. The other is loaded at the bullpen. Bob, if bullpen had been a trigger for a drinking game, in the six state region that it, you know, that mostly comprises Red Sox Nation, the whole section of the Eastern Seaboard would have been drunk before it was even into January, because they, you know, in Boston how obsessed they are, not just with the Yankee bullpen. They don't even know who their closer is, Robert.
No, we don't. We, you know, we assume it's probably going to be Matt Barnes to start, although Alex Cora has been very coy about it from the beginning, and he's talking about matchups, and he doesn't use that dreaded phrase by committee. He won't go there. But that's what we're talking about here in general right now. There's not a fixed closer at the present time, although he did say something interesting yesterday to spice the plot up a little bit, Mike and Mitch, and that is that he said, you know, I've known what I'm going to do since November.
Bob, yeah. I wouldn't be shocked. And again, people will have fun with this because we're not going to do this again until Monday, Mitch and Bob. Would you be shocked in the opener if the closer turned out to be David Price, who is not starting until the fifth game of the season?
Not in the least, because he's all, he being Cora has already said that it's very good. There is a very good possibility Price, who is not scheduled to start until the second series against Oakland, could have a relief role over the weekend. And if it's opening day, so be it. Yep. That wouldn't remotely surprise me at all.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned Houston right at the start there, Mike, and for me, you know, I look at the overall picture of baseball. I look at the National League and I see 10 teams that I think can win it. I look in the American League and I see three, realistically three. I mean, I guess you can make an argument for Cleveland, but only because somebody's got to come out of the Central Division. But Houston and the Red Sox and the Yankees seem to be the three most loaded, and as you pointed out, I think Houston might end up being the team with the most talent. But
they have pitching, and they have pitching issues. But Mitch, as you know, for being an American League Central guy, adding Michael Brantley is a huge addition to the Houston Astros.
I think the Astros are looking at this, and although they're not outwardly a team full of braggadocio, but I think they're looking at that the American League, I mean, excuse me, the championship is on loan. That they graciously allowed it out on loan last year. I think they definitely think they're the best team in baseball. I really
now they've lost. They lost two of the pitching stars of October of 2017. Charlie Morton now pitches for the Rays. Lance McCullers is hurt. Okay, but they have big young arms behind them. And Mitch, Bob is right. You know, I because we live close to where they train in West Palm. I've developed a pretty good relationship with AJ Hinch, and Mitch, I don't think that the Astros believed that they weren't going to repeat until the last out of Game 5 of the American League Championship Series. Even though the Red Sox had won 108 to their 103, they thought they were set up, and then became these bewildering three nights at Minute Maid Park, that including Game 4. And if you remember, Game 4 ends. It's an 8-6 Red Sox victory. The bases are loaded in the bottom of the ninth, and Andrew Benintendi made what I have searched my memory, the greatest game-ending October catch I have ever seen. And he dives, he makes the catch. If he doesn't, that series goes to 2-2. And Mitch, you know, listen, you've seen way more of Verlander. As great as Verlander is, it's different pitching an elimination game than it would have been for him to start Game 5 in a 2-2 series. That was, I believe the Astros came out of that in a state of shock, and Bob's right. I think that if there's a team that has a chip on its shoulder this year, it's going to be A.J. Hinch's Astros.
Yeah. Well, they did lose some people, but incredibly, they have pitching depth to make up for it on that team. And, you know, the thing about Verlander, they just extended him. You know, they gave him a longer deal. I've watched him his whole career. He's not, you know, he's been great since he's gotten there. But he does have stretches of his career where suddenly the mechanics go a little weird. And you do wonder, for a guy who throws as hard as he does, is there at his age that moment where, you know, like we're sort of seeing with LeBron James here now, well, he's mortal, because, you know, suddenly if he's not throwing harder in the sixth inning than he was in the first, he's not the same Justin Verlander. So there's a question mark there, but I agree in terms of attitude and who's got the most to prove. I think we're talking about the Houston Astros, and they've got the talent to do it.
Throw something out about the Astros, and I was reminded of this by reading Joe Sheehan's daily opus yesterday online, and I had forgotten Carlos Correa is he was injured a while back, has never been back to where he was prior to that injury. He was absolutely a superstar level player.
Yep.
At first, to that point, he wasn't the same force. He hasn't been this. If he, what interesting is followed to see whether he can get back to that. He's still so young. It's ridiculous. But the fact is that he wasn't the player last year that he had been. And it had something to do with their performance.
And
as well.
Bob, remember that the Astros Red Sox series, the reigning MVP of the league, the little guy at second base, was playing on one leg, and everybody said afterwards, if they weren't trying to win another World Series, he probably wasn't well enough to play. And even with that, Altuve hits that ball in the first inning of Game 4 that Joe West says isn't a home run, and that might have changed that game for the Astros.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, if he's back 100%, then we have a whole other matter. No, they have a lot going for them.
And
they have a lot
Springer
of
and Brantley. And
by Bregman.
The way, we haven't even talked to the guy at third base, Alex Bregman. But what did he end up, fifth in the MVP voting last year? No, he is a star. You know what, Bob and Mitch? I really thought throughout last season, even as the Red Sox were playing as great as they were, The Astros still felt like the Warriors to me because of all the young talent they have.
Yeah, they're star leading. There's no doubt about it. And they're probably they're going to have.
And they're 1-2 punch, Mitch. Your guy, Mr. Verlander, who you were nice enough to share.
As we are here in Detroit,
give and Gerrit Cole. That's another reason why the Astros, even with the Red Sox starting pitcher, are thinking, okay, get us to a short series. Oh. And Mr. Verlander's game one and Mr. Cole is game two.
They're going to have no competition. They're going to be competing against themselves, really, in the sense of...
unless you believe in the A's can do it again. And I kind of don't, but it's always crazy to sell Billy Bean short.
You're off to a bad start, though, with Olson getting hurt.
That's a good segue, because the ease with which Houston should cruise in there, and Boston and New York seem fated. One, just like last year, one's going to end up playing a wild card game that shouldn't, and going to end up. Remember how much time we spent on our broadcast talking about how unfair this is, that one of these two teams could be eliminated in a single game after winning 100 games. The opposite is true in the National League for me. There were a lot of good teams last year, a lot of teams that won are in the 90s, and now with the Philadelphia Phillies, who I think you have to begin with because all eyes are going to be on them now with Bryce Harper, they go from an 80-82 season to, if they don't win 90-plus games and are not in the playoffs, it's a complete failure. And they join, obviously, the Washington Nationals, of which much is expected, despite the fact that they keep losing players. The Atlanta Braves won that division, people forget, last year.
And the Mets got a chance to be damn good, Mitch, because of starting pitching.
So that's four teams right there in one division.
Well, don't you think that for all the time we spend, and rightfully so, I was going to ask you this because you watch it from a distance, don't you think that the National League East, because there are, as you said, four teams, that might be the most compelling division in baseball this year?
Oh, it is.
I kind of thought it was, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. You're right. The American League East gets the attention because it seems like the Yankees and Red Sox play each other every freaking weekend. ESPN, hey, it's the Yankees and Red Sox on Sunday night again. How about that? How do we pull that off? But in terms of actual, competitiveness within the division, it's not two teams, it's four teams. And how good can Bryce Harper make Philadelphia, from a 500, less than 500 team? Does he catapult them into the playoffs?
Listen, you guys have spent more time watching Philadelphia sport, and this is not an easy place to play. Okay.
We
start there. But remember this about the Phillies, Mitch. Last year, they were life and death until, the 1st of September with the Braves. It looked like the Phillies were as good a bet, maybe into, I forget when the collapse began. They had a stunning collapse in September. So I think the Phillies are loaded. I still think, and it's crazy to say this, even with a guy going 150 miles up the road to Philadelphia, I still think the Nationals are better. If I could pick one game to parachute into today, it'd be Nationals against the Mets, DeGrom against Scherzer at Nationals Park.
Yeah, that's good. I noted in USA Today there are people, majority of them picked the Nationals to win, to go all the way. But that division, I saw one projection earlier this week, one of these statistical projections, that had the four teams in question separated by two games.
Well, hey, Mitch. Yeah. Mitch. I've looked, I kind of searched my own memory bank, and then, as usual, I had Zach Lupica look this up, okay? Losing a superstar, okay, and then having your team improve the next year. And the best example in the last two decades is that Alex Rodriguez left the Mariners, and they managed to scrape by with 116 victories the next year.
Right. Hey, what do we make of, seriously, what do we make of this poll that was revealed of players who responded that the most overrated player in baseball was Bryce Harper.
Huh.
Is this just a reaction to the salary thing? Is it a reaction to what is? I mean,
Bob,
that's amusing.
Well, we
Bob,
had that discussion when he was a free agent,
right,
remember? And
right,
we talked
Mitch,
about
we
you could just
yep.
look at his years and numbers. How many times did he actually
one 100 RBI year?
Correct, and 40
and
home runs.
140 once? Home run season, one MVP right. award, and everybody says, well, he has won an MVP award. A lot of guys have won MVP awards.
Right.
That's interesting. Also, I learned something today. I had no idea. This is interesting about how baseball players are not getting the scrutiny, that we give to basketball players and football players, which is that he's a contact lens guy, that he's getting these new progressive lenses, that he's got horrible eyesight in real life. And I never for one second did anyone ever alluded to this in my awareness. Not for what it's worth. It's a fascinating little
set. Well, $300 million. That apparently didn't discourage his eyesight.
No,
so.
I'm just saying I didn't know this about him. I just find that fascinating.
I tried and I just never could wear them. And no, Bob, that I'm with you. I never knew this was any kind of issue in this young man's life.
No.
The Nationals will be judged, I think, by guys stepping up with him gone. How good is Anthony Rendon? How good is Robles?
Really,
you know, Victor Robles, who's going to, he was very promising. He's just a kid.
It might turn out to be a better baseball player than Bryce Harper, Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, one man's departure is another man's opportunity, and that's going to be, I think, the story of the Nationals if somebody steps up and shows that they had this kind of talent. And they've still obviously got Scherzer and Strasburg and now Patrick Corbin. As you say, they lost him, and some would say they're better for the talent that steps
I know,
in.
It's
that's
crazy,
younger.
Isn't it? I mean, well, but it's true.
Yeah, but why
it's...
don't they do something then? I mean, for all the every year we have this conversation about the Washington Nationals and look at the guys that they've either bought or brought along or signed. Why don't they have more success in the postseason?
They have been one of those heartbreak teams. They always will look back. Remember, they will look back on the year when they sat Strasburg down.
Yep.
When it looked like they and it was one of those,
absolutely.
You know, talk about the old Yogi line. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. Okay. They protected Strasburg, who ended up getting hurt anyway later on in his career. And that may have been their best choice. You know, the great Frank Cashin always used to say, you only get so many chances to win in this game. And they thought that they were set up so, Mitch, remember this?
Yeah.
They thought they were set up so well for the future that they could, you know, go to these lengths to protect Strasburg's arm because they were going to be the one team that protected a pitcher's arm in the most serendipitous profession in the world.
Absolutely. Now, there's one other aspect we haven't discussed. I haven't seen anyone discuss it lately, and I'm nominating us to be the ones to be the flag bearers here to inject a little intrigue into the National League East, which is the following. The skippers, three of the four skippers of these four teams are under fire, it seems to me.
You bet. 100%.
And the fourth one, can you even name? 5 seconds. Who manages the Atlanta Braves?
Atlanta?
Brian Snitker. I didn't know either.
I just
looked it up.
Brian Snitker. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I was myself. I didn't even know, guys. I looked it up. Now,
Well, Mickey Callaway has got a bad start. I think I really like Mickey Callaway. I think he's in huge trouble with a bad start because guess what, Mitch? He's working for the general manager who did not hire him. And yep. You know,
never good.
Never good. And Gabe Kapler, guess if they didn't get Harper, he would be under tremendous pressure because of the way they fell apart last year.
And because it's Philadelphia.
And Dave Martinez wasn't exactly a shooting star with the Nationals last year.
So this is an intrigue. This is part of this plot, right? Isn't this part of the dialogue that we're going to have with this National East this year?
And mathematically, they can't all win. Okay, because they have to play each other. So they can't all win 100
games. See, that's why Mitch is here. See, that's...
It's that Brandeis acumen.
He's a math guy.
Now, I was at your alma mater yesterday, Mitch, speaking.
At Brandeis?
Yeah, with Peter May, my old colleague. He teaches a journalism class there, and I was there being, being very impressed with the quality of your progeny there. I was very, very impressed.
Good to know.
Mitch, let's go back, because I want to go back to the Yankees and the Red Sox just for one second, because the Yankees are the face of the modern game in this sense. They will swing for the fences or they will strike out. And that caught up with them in the playoffs against the Red Sox. Because the Red Sox, Bob, the Red Sox have so much more balance and so many more contact guys in their batting order. And I don't think that they're subject to the kind of swing miss mentality that the Yankees are clearly caught up in. And the Yankees say, hey, listen, we won 100 games this year. Last year we may do it more. But are they not the face of what the sport has become?
Oh, yeah. And as I mentioned earlier, though, Judge is trying to cut down on the strikeouts. He's trying to cut down.
Stanton struck out 211 times last year.
We'll see how that goes. By the way, the Red Sox, you may not be paying strict attention, as you know I have to do, which is that the opening night number three hitter on this team tonight for your defending world champions will be Rafael Devers. And they are very high on this young man. They think he's a major star burst forth. We all remember 2 years ago, this one of the signature moments of that season for them 2 years ago was the home run he hit off of Chapman.
103-mile-an-hour fastball that he hit to left center and probably won the American League East. Mitch, let me ask you a question about, because there's the haves and the have-nots, but seems to me there is mild optimism again in Detroit because of, young talent that is going to, nobody is expecting them to win the Central this year, but they do have some kids that everybody thinks are worth watching.
Well, part of the flip side of giving and giving and giving and giving is that you do get something in return for it. And what they got in return for it were prospects. A number of those prospects are going to find their way up. Kristen Stewart is up on the team here now, the left fielder. He's going to probably bat fifth. Candelario was a good pickup, bring up last year. They've got Casey Mize down in the minor leagues, the number one pick, obviously, and it's going to be a matter of time before they give him a crack at it. But I just, Mike, Jordan Zimmermann is their starter, okay? He's their premier guy. They lost Michael Fulmer for the entire year to shoulder injury, and so Shane Green is their closer. They're not going to win a lot of games, and Miguel Cabrera is obviously, that's the wind that blows their sails. And if anyone out there thinks Miguel Cabrera is going to make it through this year healthy and play 162 games, God bless you. I want to ride that optimism. But I'd be surprised if he makes it through 100. And so without that, you start to struggle. And then what happens with young players is, do they have the motivation, to go through it? I do think that they're going to be pretty good in a couple years, but it's going to take a couple years. And it's a shame that, you got to do this, but this is process. This is the Philadelphia 76ers. Yep. There's more and more teams in professional sports doing this, and we just have to accept it. Last thing before we jump off of baseball, it would be a disservice not to talk about the Los Angeles Dodgers. I mean, they were in the World Series last year. And it does seem, when you look at projections across the board, that nobody seems to doubt that they're going to win their division and be one of many strong contenders. Clayton Kershaw, once again, a question mark. They lost Machado. What do we think they're going to do this year?
Listen, it's two names. It's Kershaw. That's actually four names. if he's not himself or some reasonable facsimile thereof, I don't know how they can win. And you know, Buehler becomes a very big part of this equation. But they get Corey Sager back. Bellinger, they think, is going to have a better year. They're still really, really good. They have a very good manager. And Mitch, you know, I talked about the Astros coming in with a chip on their shoulder. There's one team that's played in the last two World Series, and that's the Dodgers. Okay. But if, you know, Kershaw shows you the risk of long-term starting pitcher contracts, because how's that deal looking for them right now?
A guy, I think an important thing is Seager getting back.
Oh, he's great. He's great.
This is a major, major player. I still look at I can't see any the competition enough, even with a missing Kershaw or an Imperator. I still think they got enough.
You're making our producer Tyler Brewer just faint and giddy with excitement, because he is a crazed Los Angeles Dodgers.
Well,
fan.
I mean, I just got to be realistic here, you know, and I just look, and I'm staring at this roster. I'm staring at this depth chart, and come on, who in the division is going to touch them? I'm sorry, I would be stunned.
Well, you think Machado can't help them? Help the Padres?
I think they actually might be a lot better.
Can't get closer than 25 games behind them. Which at one point last year the Dodgers had a 25 game lead.
All right, so 19.
Cut that to 17.
They're going to be. You know, I will say this. I believe that over the next couple of years, the Padres are going to be a team to watch. I actually, honestly, believe that.
Predicting 3 years from now is already hard enough just to predict 6 months from now. Hey, before we go on, guys, let me say this about Hair Club, our sponsor. You know, your confidence is important, and sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of their Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. Hair Club is a leader in total hair solutions with a legacy of success for over 40 years. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair or learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. You can see for yourself just how powerful great hair can be. Hey, we get it. Your hair is visibly thinning, and if you see it, you know others see it too. So get your confidence back. And the first step is to check out Hair Club. Here's how you can do that. Go to hairclub.com/hoops today for a free hair health and scalp analysis for new customers. And you can enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying Hair Club service after that initial consultation. That's hairclub.com/hoops for a free hair health and scalp analysis, and enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying Hair Club service after that initial consultation. Hairclub.com/hoops. Experience your hair and your life at its best, only with Hair Club. We're sure you're going to love the club. All right, let's shift over to the NCAA tournament, which is this is a great time of year to have all this stuff going on. The NBA is coming down the stretch, and hockey is coming to its conclusion. Yep. And now you got the March Madness and baseball starting up. So finally, after what seemed to be a fairly dormant period, there's a lot of excitement going on. I think the story of the NCAA tournament is that you still have all your ones and all your twos. So I'll start by asking, when this weekend is done, which of the four number ones do you think faces the most likely odds of not being in?
Mitch,
the final
I don't
four?
Know likely. I this sounds crazy after what we saw early Sunday evening. I think Duke is vulnerable. I as great as Zion was, Barrett made a play, you know, everything worked out right for them down the stretch. I would not go to sleep on Virginia Tech. I would not go to sleep. And if it turns out to be your Spartans against the Dukies. And Michigan State plays, you know, if it's, again, if it's, you're right, it's not the best defense in the country, but it's pretty damn good. I think this weekend is a minefield for Duke.
Duke has been vulnerable from the start, Mike, and even though I, in my so-called bracket, I did pick them, but I, it was with some trepidation, and their two weaknesses are A, the spotty, at best, outside shooting, and B, the depth. It's not the quality depth that they would, you know, you would want necessarily. And God forbid if Zion were to get into foul trouble, I think they'd be in serious trouble. I think by, they are vulnerable, but Virginia Tech has just lost a player. I don't know how important it's going to be psychologically.
I know.
This is not a good time for, you know, hijinks off the court, but unfortunately they got to deal with that. I think the most vulnerable team is Gonzaga. Number one, because of who they're playing. Florida State is a scary team when they're playing well. They got, you know, the rim protection. They got the athletes. Terrence Mann is
Mr. Album loves Florida State.
I think Florida State over Gonzaga is a very, very good possibility.
I didn't think I'll
root for Gonzaga, but I fear for them.
I thought Gonzaga was the weakest of the four number ones before they seeded them, and then when I saw the brackets and as it's playing itself out, Florida State, and then Michigan or Texas Tech, both of whom can hold you to 44 points. You know, that ain't going to be easy. It doesn't matter who comes out of that Michigan game. Gonzaga's going to have their hands full defensively getting past them. I picked Michigan when I saw the original bracket to get to the Final Four because of that, because I do think that if their defense is on, they can stop Gonzaga. They're going to have an interesting game, obviously, against Texas Tech. They're playing their mirror image defensively, and it's only going to be who makes some shots in that game that's going to determine who breaks 50 and wins the game. Then Gonzaga. Mike, I totally agree with you with Duke. And here's something that you're going to hear a lot of if Duke and Michigan State both win. You're going to hear about how I think it's 1-11 that Tom Izzo is against Duke.
Yeah.
And this is going to become a very big story about, you know, you can only beat the same dog so many times before either that dog is whimpered into submission and Michigan State's just never going to beat Duke, or it bites back. And that's going to be the storyline, and you're going to hear that extensively if both of those two teams come out of it. And I like Michigan State's team this year, and I do think they play with a little bit of a pride factor. You know, they've lost a lot of players over the course of the season who, you know, for injury and guys got out and terrible breaks. And they've managed to always come back. And so adversity is not a big deal for them. They beat their arch rival Michigan three straight times. That tells you something about a team, you know, that's when they got to get up for a team that they don't like. And they certainly don't like Duke. And Duke has ended way more Michigan State campaigns or ruined, you know, perfect seasons and things like that, that than any one team has done. I think, I mean, is any other team 1-11 against each other at this level? You know, you got to talk about the top 5-6 teams in the country, right? Are any of them 1-11 against each other? So,
you know what?
That's
Mitch,
a big end.
When you were saying that, I was thinking about the night that at the Masters tennis tournament in New York, where Vitas Gerulaitis, finally beat Jimmy Connors, and Vitas got to the press conference afterwards. He was 0-17 against Connors, and before anybody asked him a question, he pointed a finger at us and he said, "I just want you guys to know one thing: nobody beats Vitas Gerulaitis 18 times in a row."
Yeah,
and that's what you're talking about that's an extraordinary statistic.
There aren't many non-conference sample sizes this big. You know, this is a very odd one that over the historically, and so I doubt, Mitch, to answer your question, I doubt there's anything remotely comparable.
Well, plus with the same two coaches, Bob, the same two coaches.
Yeah,
there
the
combined been Izzo service and Krzyzewski.
Well, their combined service is right, approaching 60
years.
if it hasn't gotten there yet, because Coach K, I believe 82 and 88 or so for
Izzo was late 80s,
so probably hey, one team. I'm sorry, Mike, you were going to say something.
I was just going to ask you guys, my friend Mitch Album and Bob Ryan, is this the year that Virginia finally, just talk about trying to slay a dragon. Is Virginia finally going to slay the dragon?
I am so ambivalent. I have been continually ambivalent about Virginia. I predicted that they would lose. On my bracket, I have them losing to Tennessee. Then I watched them play against Oklahoma, and I saw them suffocate them. They pythonized them, right? They displayed a depth I didn't know they had. This kid coming off the bench, a 7-footer, Huff, played a terrific game. I didn't know he existed. I went and looked them up. They're deep. That Diakite was monster the other day. The guy and the Hunter, they can be very, very good. We all know how to. I watched the way they play defense. My God, are they active. Incredibly active with athletes. They play like that. They could, you know, they're. I'm going to have to say I was wrong.
Can I ask you guys this? Okay, when we look at the whole scope of this weekend, and as usual, we're having this conversation on Thursday morning. We're going to have a lot to say on Monday morning. Okay, but we've got a tremendously compelling what feels like the heavyweight champ of the regular season in Duke and Zion and Coach K and all that. Can you remember a more loaded Sweet 16 weekend than this one? Because I cannot.
No, not when you've got all the twos and threes playing. All the
ones
twos and
twos.
Threes. And all the ones and twos. I mean, come on. And the ones and twos are all there, and the twos are playing threes in each bracket. No, this is a chalk. This is major chalk. This is Al McGuire's, Nirvana. Chalk.
This looks like one of those tournaments that they put together to start the season where they invite all the best teams from the last year to participate in one of those teams. If you were doing that, honestly, if you were doing that with eight teams – these are the eight teams that you would put into that tournament if you say we're going to start 2020.
And just to amplify that, Mitch, I looked this up because, the Bible for college basketball fans of preseason, everything else is like tied for, 19th place, forget second, is Blue Ribbon. The Blue Ribbon yearbook, which has been in existence since 1981. I looked it up, and their preseason predictions, 11 of the current 16 were they got. They got 11. And then in their top 25, they got 22 out of their top 25 that they predicted. So they knew what they were doing. But this is chalk. This is the chalk that the people, the recruiting gurus who know who all these kids are and all the AAU people and all that, they would have. Well, I hate it when they're right. I hate it when they're right. But unfortunately, this is absolutely chalk.
If we had to put money on one not being there, it would be Gonzaga.
That's my pick.
That's not to say that Duke is going to win or North Carolina or Virginia, but if you had to pick one.
The question is, who's the most likely one of the four not to make it? Of the most likely, in order of preference, I would go this way. Gonzaga 1, Virginia 2, Duke 3, and Carolina, in other words, Carolina would be the most likely
Carolina
to get through.
Most chance,
Yeah, I think Virginia. I would take Virginia. I just because of their track record, I'll believe they're going to make the Final Four when they make the Final Four. Okay, but moving on, and just a quick NFL conversation, gentlemen. They have seen the light. They have seen the light. The light was emanating from, or was it the darkness from the city of New Orleans? Was it light or was it darkness, Mitch? But they can now replay. So at least that call can't ever happen again that steals a Super Bowl from a team.
Okay, so am I the only one? First of all, I hated that call. If that moment repeats itself in that game with those consequences hanging on the line, I'm going to be very happy that they have this. But for all the other moments prior to that, leading up, am I the only one who believes that when you watch pass coverage in slow motion, it almost always looks like there's pass interference?
Like it always looks like holding in the offensive line,
Mitch.
That's
right. That's right. I don't know what you gain at looking at a slow motion replay. Slow motion is great for seeing if a guy's foot went out of bounds. It's right. Perfect. I swear the technology was invented for that. Bunch of guys in the room, scientists saying, what should we come up with? I know. So slow motion replay will always show your foot is on the white. That's perfect. Slow motion replay for pass interference, it's really, really
tough.
Well,
I don't think we're even talking slow motion now. But this was an outright assault, the question.
Okay, but I said, for that moment, that game, that obvious,
okay. This was a mugging.
I don't think slow motion has been mentioned at all. I think it's just replay. I mean, that is part, what you're saying, I agree with at times, but I don't think that's what the issue was here. I don't think that they're not thinking about slow. They just want an opportunity to right an obvious wrong, such as we saw in that game.
And Mitch, you know what? Here's what I'm thinking. You know what the one last piece to this puzzle is? And I know you can't do this and you can't bring these guys out into the light. I would still like to hear the explanation of why no flag was thrown on that play from the guys closest to the plays with whistles.
Did they not offer that? I seem to remember some really lame reason why they thought that, and now I can't remember what it was. I thought some guy came out.
What's interesting, over and above what they did, it's how they did it, and the fact that the coaches were the protagonists, which is not the way it normally works. And they also did.
And only Mike Brown abstained, by the way. How about
very,
that?
Very, very interesting story, and I don't know how many other people wrote it in this manner, but in the Boston Globe today, Ben Volen, about the haste which this was done and the 11th hour nature of the way this was done and the fact that owners were ready to get on their planes and go back at home. It came to a head oddly quickly in the end. And it was driven
by the
coaches.
For that sport, you're right. For the way the wheels have changed.
It was driven
grinds.
By the coaches, which That's is right. the first time ever that something like this goes the other way around.
The onus, of course, is going to be on the coaches because they're going to have, you know, limited opportunities to make the challenge. And then we're going to hear that oft-repeated announcer phrase, is there enough to overturn the call on the field?
Yeah, right. Well,
so
yeah.
Because you can make, remember, they can challenge non-calls, okay, as well as calls. You know, so when a flag comes out, it's, we don't agree with that. You know, we want to challenge that. Okay, that's a little simpler. But now the onus is, can you undo? Was it not pass interference? That's going to be
very
interesting.
I've always thought that. Mitch, haven't you always thought that's bogus? It's either right or it's wrong. Is there enough to overturn? You're right. Is there enough to overturn? No.
Right.
If it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong.
Well, it's going to be very gray area, Mike, on this thing.
Things can be tough. Did you ever see a more incredible, you don't know, thing of its nature than determining whether that ball hit the rim last week? And how many million times we saw it in different angles.
Different ways. Yep.
And I, you know, I mean, that's hard. Some things are very hard. Oh, by the way, me tooing Mitch with you on the nature of the replay with regard to the foot on the bounds. It's just like, I think the very best service that replay has served in basketball that has solved a lot of important decisions is who gets the ball out of bounds, who knocked the ball out of bounds. They can now check that. We can always know who's right and wrong in that regard. And that's a big call at the end of a game, who knocked the ball out of bounds.
How this elongates games and the first one of these that people are still going to argue over when it's close. The thing about New Orleans and the reason that this pushed this thing through is nobody would argue that. But what about the call that is arguable? I kind of thought it was pass interference.
Well, perfection.
We're never going to have perfection.
Ever. They're trying to make use of this. This technology is a two-edged sword. If we didn't have it, and we're going back to no, you know, the world would go. It's just like, you know, self-dial phones. It's just like a world without computers. We got along fine. But now we have this technology, and we're slaves to it. We're all slaves to it. And now we have this technology that they've got to use it to try to get it right. We got to get it right.
Wow.
And we're never going to have it perfect. It can't
all right,
be
let me
perfect.
Let me close the book on this conversation by saying this. They did the right thing, but guess what that doesn't do? It doesn't get the Saints their trip to the Super Bowl back.
Right. You know, I also say in that regard, Mike, yes, except don't throw the interception in the overtime when you can control your
game. There never should have been an overtime.
Let's not rehash the Super Bowl.
Let's instead
end the program as we have ever since the Sports Reporters existed, TV or podcast, with our parting shots. And Bob Ryan, why don't you lead us off?
Did you know there is a quick way you could save money? Switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. Now how about homeowners or renters insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to Geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's Geico.com.
Now, parting shots.
4,825,000. According to USA Today, that's the sum total of contractual bonuses conceivably to be earned by 9 of the 16 coaches in the Sweet 16. Full info on the remaining 7 is not available. The sums range from $75,000 for Virginia Tech's Buzz Williams to $1,175,000 for Florida State's Leonard Hamilton. Now, I am not a major advocate of paying collegiate players. It is a very logistically complicated subject, it seems to me. We'll have that debate some other day. But these bonuses are, well, unseemly. I'm sure each of the 16 is already in the seven-figure salary range. You would think colleges would be a bit more careful about their public image if they're trying to maintain the idea that it's all about, quote, amateur, unquote, athletics. For what these guys get, they ought to achieve, wouldn't you think? Meanwhile, if I'm Buzz Williams, I'm thinking about hiring Leonard Hamilton's agent.
Mike Trout had just signed a bazillion-dollar contract with the Angels that seems to last about a gazillion years, is the biggest superstar of American sports who is seen the least. He's as good at baseball as LeBron James has been at basketball, and he now does have the biggest contract in history. And you wonder, if he walked into your diner while you were having breakfast, just how many people would recognize him? He's this generation's Willie Mays. He has that kind of skill set. But it is worth remembering that Mays, when he was still Mays, played in two World Series in his career before he made it back to the series with the Mets when he was over the age of 40. There are no guarantees in baseball. Barry Bonds played one World Series. Alex Rodriguez, who hit 697 home runs in the big leagues, even if he did it with help, played one with the Yankees. Trout's played three playoff games in his career so far and hit one October home run. He is not just the greatest player of his time. He is one of the greatest of all time, except that not enough people are watching. I wish I could tell you he'll get the great postseason stage this year, but I don't think he will.
Big Baller just got smaller. The shoe brand created by loudmouth LeVar Ball to exploit his kids' basketball talent just lost its most valuable asset. Lonzo Ball quit the outfit in a dispute over his father's friend and Big Baller's partial stakeholder, Alan Foster. Foster had a significant criminal past, something Lonzo apparently didn't know anything about. You'd have thought Daddy might have told him. But then Papa Ball was never about transparency, only about publicity. Lonzo breaking ties is a first and big step away from the choking relationship with his father, which had grown, in a word, creepy. But equally creepy is the embrace that LeBron James and his inseparable Nike cloak are now offering. James said, quote, "I just seen the kid turning into a man." And, quote, "Whatever the kid decides to do, if it's with Nike, we would welcome him." He also added with a smile, "He plays well when he has on his Nikes." Enough with viewing this kid by what he wears on his feet. Let's see where he's even playing next year. By the way, the idea of an NBA player making and wearing his own shoes isn't awful and could have shaken the monopoly that a handful of companies have. It's just that charging customers a month's salary to buy them, like LeVar Ball did, is lunacy. Lonzo Ball has had one of the rockiest entrances into the NBA in recent memory. He just shed one big burden towards becoming his own man. Maybe telling Nike not so fast would be enough. That's going to do it for today's broadcast of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Thursday. You can get it wherever you get popular podcasts, including on the Stitcher platform. Make sure to check it out there. We will see you on Monday. And until then, with all the brackets and opening days and all the great stuff going on around the sports landscape, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great weekend.